So thank you again, everyone, for coming and being with us. Today is also we are requesting everyone to pray for one of our very dear friends who departed about 2 months back, Sharmaji, whose picture is right here, and we are going to talk more about him and his association with our family in Newburgh a little bit later. But I would like to request you to pray for him and for all of us to make this life a worthwhile, so to speak. You know, human form of life is very, very precious, and we have to take steps towards, you know, higher understanding. And one of those steps is to inquire more and understand more with the spiritual knowledge. And our dear friend Dr. Perumal, who is a gastroenterologist in the area, he is taking that step today. He's taking Srimad Bhagavatam, who is considered to be the embodiment of God, embodiment of Krishna, in the literary form, in the form of you know, scripture or the books itself. So he's taking that one today. It's a set of 14 books, 16 books, that comes from 12 cantos. And so I would request Maharaj to write something for his blessing. Please come, Dr. Perumal. And anyone else interested in getting or inviting God's embodiment in the form of a book or books, please contact us and we can facilitate that as well. Thank you.
Murli Krishna. Murli Krishna. That's his first name.
Murli Krishna.
We have Murli Vadak Prabhu here.
Thank you all for coming and giving me this opportunity to share this afternoon with you, part of this afternoon. What's little left of the morning, so we'll start calling it afternoon. I'm going to speak on a topic. I think it's been presented as the yoga of relationships. And I would prefer, if allow me, to read a verse from that Srimad Bhagavatam which we just gave to Dr. Perumal, and which partially addresses this subject, but hopefully we can present it in a way that it can be easily assimilated and understood by putting the verse within context that it's been spoken. So this is from the Srimad Bhagavatam, and it's spoken by great sage Narada Muni to a 5-year-old boy, Dhruva. I'll read the verse and then I'll try to put it into context, and then we can discuss the topic about relationships. The verse is Gunadi Kang Udam Dipset Anukosham Gunadhamat Maitrim Samana on his chin and on top part of Vipulyate. Every man should act like this. When he meets a person more qualified than himself, he should be very pleased. When he meets someone less qualified than himself, he should be compassionate toward him. And when he meets someone equal to himself, he should make friendship with him. In this way, one is never affected by the threefold miseries of this material world. And the commentary by A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Generally, when we find someone more qualified than ourselves, we become envious of him. When we find someone less qualified, we deride him. And when we find someone equal, we become very proud of our activities. These are the causes of all material tribulations. The great sage Narada therefore advised that a devotee should act perfectly. Instead of being envious of a more qualified man, one should be jolly to receive him. Instead of being oppressive to a less qualified man, one should be compassionate toward him, just to raise him to the proper standard. And when one meets an equal, instead of being proud of one's own activities before him, one should treat him as a friend. One should also have compassion for the people in general who are suffering due to forgetfulness of Krishna. These important functions will make one happy within this material world. Omagyara Timirandasya Vinanguna Salakaya Chakshu Angani Tanyana Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Ukam Kuroti Vachalam Hangam Mangayate Vinim Nakri Patamaha Mandin Shri Gurave Nama Om Vishnu Vidaya Krishna Prasaya Bhutale Shri Mate Bhakti Vidanta Samaduti Namaste Namaste Sarasati Devi Vanaman Vacharani Yavrishesha Samyavari Master Chari Sitarani Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadara Shri Vasana Gaura Bhakta Vrinda
Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama
As we said, this verse was spoken as an instruction to Dhruva, who was a 5-year-old boy. Seems like a pretty elevated instruction for a 5-year-old boy, but Dhruva was a pretty elevated personality. Although he was only 5, and we see in many places in Srimad Bhagavatam, not only Dhruva, but Prahlad, also a 5-year-old boy, had profound wisdom and was deeply compassionate and could see things and see others from a standpoint or from a vision which was quite unique in terms of their spiritual vision, likely due to their some contact with spiritual life in a previous life. But also by contact with a highly spiritual personality in the present life, they both made further progress at a very young age by hearing transcendental instructions from saintly persons. Narada Muni was one such person who gave instructions to this 5-year-old boy, Dhruva. And the setting is something which is relevant. So we'll try to describe the setting that this verse was spoken in. Dhruva had a father, his name was Uttanapada, who was a very powerful king, who was the son of another powerful personality known as Svayambhuva Manu, and who was the son of Brahma, the original creator of this universe. And therefore, Dhruva's heritage was quite profound, if you take that into consideration. Coming from such a family of great saintly persons, who are also administrators themselves. Dhruva's father, King Uttanapada, had two queens. One of them, his name was Suruchi, and another whose name was Suniti. And Uttanapad was sitting on the throne in his palace, and his sons, two sons, he had a son from each queen, one whose name was Uttama, another whose name was Dhruva. In Vedic times, kings would have more than one queen, and in this particular case, Uttanapad had two queens. When Uttanapad was sitting on the throne, one of his sons, Uttama, desired to sit on his lap. And he immediately accepted his son, Uttama, on his lap. And Dhruva also had the same aspiration. When he attempted to sit on his father's lap, his father did not reciprocate in the same way as he did with his stepbrother. And he was hesitant because present in that assembly was his queen Suruchi. And Suruchi was known to be a favorite queen. And Suruchi said something to Dhruva that really provoked something in him. Suruchi said to Dhruva, "You're not qualified to sit on your father's lap. If you want to sit on your father's lap, I'll give you a recommendation." Recommendation was, "I recommend that you go to the forest, engage in executing strict austerities, mystic yoga, seek out the Supreme Lord, who can award all benedictions. And when you seek out the Supreme Lord and come in contact with him, you should ask him for the benediction that in your next life, you can take birth from my womb. And when you take birth from my womb, then you can sit on your father's lap." Tough. It's tough for this five-year-old boy to swallow that, first of all, he was seeing his brother sit on his father's, stepbrother sit on his father's lap, and then to hear that he was not considered to be equally a son as his stepbrother and his father. And then what to speak of the fact that he was being deprived, not only deprived of their opportunity to sit on his father's lap, but insulted himself and his mother, which was also very painful for him. And being infuriated by these words from his stepmother, he left that place in great anger. Dhruva, being the son of a king, he had this capacity to be angry. A king is, during Vedic times, kings were supposed to be angry because kings were meant to protect the citizens, and in order to protect the citizens and had to fight, it's very difficult to fight without anger. Therefore, in Vedic times, the saintly kings, they fought, but they were known as kshatriyas, which means to protect from hurt, to protect religious principles, to protect others from exploitation. And because they were saintly, they were conversant with the laws of God, and therefore their fighting was not based upon simply some whim or some intent to exploit, but their fighting was simply to protect the welfare of others. But still, they had to fight, such as Bhagavad Gita, as we know, was spoken on the battlefield where Krishna spoke to Arjuna, who was also a kshatriya, and he had to fight in the same way to protect religious principles and to protect the citizens from exploitation. So Dhruva had this anger in him, and of course naturally he wanted to go to his mother. But word spread so fast that his mother found out even before he got there. And I oftentimes, when I reflect on this, even in Vedic times, many thousands of years ago, word spread fast even without the internet. People didn't have to go to CNN to find out that Dhruva was insulted by the Queen. What to speak of Facebook. It spread fast. And therefore, when Dhruva approached his mother, Suniti, she was also very disturbed that her son had to be subjected in this way by her co-wife. And but nonetheless, she also decided to give him some instruction. Just as Saruchi gave him instruction, you should go to the forest, perform mystic yoga, seek out the Supreme Lord, get a benediction. Suniti gave instruction. Suniti's first instruction he gave to his son was, you should never avenge or seek revenge to anything that is done to you. Because if you seek revenge, you, by trying to cause pain to others, you'll have to experience pain yourself. That was the first thing she told Dhruva. And Dhruva had great respect for his mother. And he tried to assimilate this instruction. But then his mother continued and said, actually, your stepmother gave you very good instruction. You should accept it. You should go to the forest and you should perform mystic yoga and you should seek out the Supreme Lord. And when you get the association of the Lord, you should ask for the fulfillment of your desires. Now, Dhruva Maharaj's desires at that particular point in time was that he wanted revenge. He definitely wanted revenge. He was obsessed with this revenge. He wanted revenge against his father, because his father didn't speak up and defend him in the presence of his stepmother. He wanted revenge against his stepmother for insulting words, not only to him, but to his mother. He wanted the revenge to his brother, because he was allowed, took advantage of his father's lap, but Dhruva wasn't allowed to. He was obsessed. Narada Muni, as we said, a great saint, he is well known for his compassion. He's well known for his wisdom, his devotion. He's also well known to be a personality who travels, or is capable of traveling everywhere by dint of his own mystic powers. And whenever he sees a candidate who's qualified for good instruction, he always appears in that place. And he considered this five-year-old boy to be a good candidate. His heritage, his determination, and his great potential, which Narada Muni saw in him. And Narada Muni appeared and then spoke to Dhruva and tried to dissuade Dhruva from pursuing his mission. He said that, you're a five-year-old boy, and don't you know that great mystic yogis have attempted to perform severe austerities and penances, and even in one lifetime have been unable to get the fulfillment of their desires to see face to face the Supreme Lord? They performed it through a whole life. They were much older than you. You're 5 years old. Why don't you go home and try to become equipoised, peaceful? And one of the instructions he gave was this verse that we just read. That you should try to be peaceful in this world by seeing everyone from a spiritual perspective. And he says that when you see somebody who's more qualified than yourself, you should be very happy to receive him. You should, because as our spiritual master Srila Prabhupada says, generally we see somebody who's more qualified, we may become envious. Why is he getting so much respect? Why is he getting so much opportunity? So many things that this person seems to have, an symptom of envy is we think that I'd like to get equal amount of attention, respect, or benefit, profit, whatever the qualities may manifest in a superior person. So Narada Muni said you should be very careful and you should avoid being envious of persons who are greater than yourself, superior to yourself. Now, we can discuss what does it mean, superior, equal, because sometimes when we hear the different statuses of living beings, we think, oh, wait a minute, are we going to stop? Our understanding is, or spiritual understanding, that Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, is that all living beings are equal. In fact, Krishna even states, Vijayavanaya Sampani, Brahmani Gavi Hastani. And he says that the humble sage, by virtue of true wisdom, he sees everyone equal. He sees the gentle and learned Brahmin. He sees the elephant, the cow, the dog, and dog eater. All with equal vision. So spiritual vision means to see everyone equally. But yet now we're saying that there are different so-called stratifications. Somebody is superior, somebody is inferior, somebody is equal, somebody is less fortunate. And Narada Muni is therefore suggesting to Dhruva Maharaj how to deal with everyone according to the proper spiritual understanding. So yes, although it is true that all living entities are equal, and that all living entities, in fact, the Isha Upanishad states that one who sees all living entities in spiritual sparks and quality one with the Lord becomes a new true knower of things. What then can be illusion or anxiety for him? One who has spiritual vision, he sees that every living entity is equal because everyone is part and parcel of the Supreme. And everyone is the Son of God. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita that he is the seed, aham bija pratapita, I'm the seed-giving father of all living beings. And therefore, because he's the seed-giving father of all living beings, everyone is understood to be the son or daughter, whichever it may be, of the Supreme Lord. And therefore, everyone, the son or the daughter, they all have equal rights in the family. So, Krishna says, I'm the seed-giving father of all living entities, and that is also spiritual vision, how to see everyone equally. And therefore, Isha Upanishad says that when we see all living beings equally, in spiritual sparks, in quality one with the Supreme, one becomes a true knower of things. One can transcend illusion and anxiety by dint of that spiritual vision. That means to see all living beings in terms of their relationship with the Supreme. The example is given that just as when the sun rises in the sky, by the presence of the sun, one can automatically see everything that was previously in the darkness. So in the same way, when one understands who is the Supreme, one sees all living entities as spiritual sparks in quality one with the Lord. He doesn't see the outer covering. He doesn't see the body. He doesn't make distinctions. But this is a very elevated spiritual vision. It's a very elevated spiritual vision to come to. And it cannot be imitated. Because generally, we do make distinctions. We make distinctions between who is my friend and who is not my friend. We make distinctions between who is my family and who is not my family. We make distinctions between who are my countrymen and who are not my countrymen. It's a distinction that, unfortunately, is very pervasive today in human society, that although we are all spiritual sparks in quality one with the Supreme, we have a tendency to make distinctions based upon designations, external, temporary designations of the body. Therefore, when one makes such distinctions, it is a cause of conflict. Therefore, we see conflict between friends and enemies. We see conflict between families. We see conflict between communities. We see conflict between nations. We see conflict between a lot of conflict. In fact, that is one of the symptoms of the present age. It's the age of conflict. And one of the symptoms of the present age is that even by a slight provocation, a little spark in the forest can create blazing forest fire. In the same way, in the present age, a little slight provocation can create conflict between individuals, families, communities, nations. And unfortunately, it is due to this inability to see all living entities as spiritual sparks that these conflicts arise. So I bring out this point only to emphasize that, yes, spiritual vision is a required vision for actually creating harmony and peace in human society. But how to obtain spiritual vision? How to get that spiritual vision? It's natural, it's there within everyone, everyone has a capacity for it. But to how to obtain it, the Vedic literatures explain that the best way to obtain it is to hear from and associate those who have it. And therefore, in order to get the most benefit, one has to make distinctions between who has spiritual vision, who doesn't have spiritual vision, and how do I treat those who have spiritual vision. If I treat everyone equally, I may listen to somebody who doesn't have spiritual vision, and he may counteract everything I heard from a person who did have spiritual vision, if they're equal. I have to make a distinction. If I don't make distinctions, then, unfortunately, conflict will prevail and will continue. So therefore, this verse is spoken to help us understand how to make distinctions, but to respect everyone. Because without respect, there's no question of being able to have relationships with anyone. In fact, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in his teachings, he has taught us that we can chant Hare Krishna in a humble state of mind if we think ourselves lower than the straw or the street, devoid of all sense of false prestige, ready to offer all respect towards all living beings, and not wanting any respect from oneself, or expecting respect from oneself. He says that this spiritual depth of quality will enable one to actually have proper dealings with all living beings if there's respect. In fact, if we look deeper into the subject of respect, as we said, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has taught us to respect all living beings. Why do we respect all living beings? Because of spiritual vision, we understand that the Supreme Lord is situated in the heart of all living beings. And therefore, because He's situated within the heart of all living beings, everybody is a temple of the Supreme Lord. And everybody is a temple, because there, within the body, is the soul, the eternal living entity, spiritual spark, and also the super soul. There are different manifestations of the Supreme. Srimad Bhagavatam, again, describes Vedanti Tatvat Vidas Tatvat Vyajjanam Advayam Brahmeti Paramatmeti Bhagavan Iti Shabhyate. That learned transcendentalists who know the absolute truth, they call this non-dual substance Brahman, which is the all-pervasive energy of the Supreme, Paramatma, which is the manifestation of the Supreme within the heart of every living being, and Bhagavan, who is the original primeval person, the cause of all causes, and from whom everything emanates. These are different aspects of the Supreme. And therefore, spiritual vision means to see that in the heart of every living being is Paramatma, the Supersoul. And that Supersoul, the Paramatma, what does he do? He witnesses and gives sanction. He witnesses all the desires of the living entities. He understands everything that is going on within the heart. And he witnesses everything. But because the living being cannot act independent from the Supreme, whatever desires that living being has, the Lord, as the Supersoul within the heart, he says, okay, he gives sanction. You can do it. Because not a blade of grass moves without the will of the Lord. If he is the Supreme Controller, it means nothing can move without his will. If we have will, the Lord has will. The Lord's will is supreme, our will is minute. If we will to do something, we desire to do something, then the Lord allows us to do it and gives sanction. Yes, you can do it. So, in fact, Srila Prabhupada gives the example, just like a young child may be very persistent with their parents. And they're very, very persistent that they want something, and the parent says, no, 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 you shouldn't do this, it's not good for you. The child is so persistent, they start screaming, making a whole spectacle of themselves, especially. Any of you ever had that experience with a child in the supermarket and they go buy everything they see they want? And they start making a spectacle. So, because they're so persistent, sometimes the parent may relent and say, okay, here, you can have it. Child couldn't have it without the sanction of the parent. Right? So the parent says, okay, you can have it. In the same way, the Supreme Lord, who is the witness in the heart, he knows how persistent we are. I know. I want to do it. I want to have it. So he gives sanction. That is one of his functions within the heart. And he witnesses. He understands the desires, everything that we want in this world. And therefore, he is manifested in the heart of all living beings to fulfill this function, and that is one of his features. So therefore, one who has spiritual vision sees that Krishna is in everyone's heart, and he's simply fulfilling everyone's desire. Giving them a particular body, giving them a particular relationship, putting them in a particular family, in a particular country, in a particular planet, all according to their desires. And in this way, spiritual vision means to see all living entities, and also within the heart is the Supreme Lord who is fulfilling their desires. And therefore, we respect all living beings, because their body is a temple of the Lord. And to respect all living beings means, Lord Chaitanya is instructed that to respect everyone, that means we should never want to cause harm to any living being. That is respect. Respect means that we should never think about purposely or intentionally causing harm. As soon as we think about causing harm, that is disrespect for life. And yet we see so many people, unfortunately, they willfully cause harm to others. In different ways, either by causing physical pain or causing mental pain. In fact, one of our acharyas has even described, there's a verse in the Srimad Bhagavatam, a verse spoken by another great sage, who says that the sharp arrows, when sharp arrows are fired, they pierce the chest and enter the heart. They are not as painful as the sharp arrows of insulting words of a materialistic person that pierce the heart and become lodged there. More painful. More painful. That sharp arrow pierces the heart. Finished. But the sharp arrows of insulting words that pierce the heart and become lodged in the heart cause great pain. And he describes that one characteristic of disrespect for all living beings is that when a person willfully causes pain to another living being, that is disrespect. Sometimes pain may manifest, just like if a physician may cause pain to his patient. I'm sure some of you may be aware of that. But the physician is thinking, I'm helping this person. He's not thinking, I'm causing you pain because I'd like to see you writhe under my knife. He's not thinking that way. Hopefully he's not thinking that way. But he's actually, he causes pain because he's thinking, I'm helping this person, and please tolerate the pain, and in due course of time, hopefully, we'll both be able to reap the fruit of this effort. But he never willfully causes pain. Why would some willfully cause pain to another living being? There can only be one explanation. Envy. Envy. Why to willingly cause pain and be unable to respect all living beings? It can only be due to envy. And envy, sometimes it's not very easy to perceive how it exists within the heart. Sometimes we can't really identify it, locate it. But we see oftentimes in relationships, we cause pain to others. Sometimes unknowingly, sometimes knowingly, unfortunately. We think, and just like, why did Suruchi say this to her son? Was it she thinking, oh, Dhruva, I'm going to give you some good instruction now for your benefit? She wasn't thinking that way. It was envy. She was thinking, you're not my son, you're her son. Making distinctions. And she was envious. She was envious of his mother and envious of him. Because she saw him as a product of her co-wife. And she was thinking, I like the benefit of being treated special. And you can't be treated special because you're the son of somebody who shouldn't be treated special. Envy. Look how much pain it caused Dhruva. And Dhruva was actually so much pain that even when Narada Muni gave this instruction to him, Dhruva actually said to Narada, he said, these instructions are all very good, but they don't touch my heart. He wanted revenge. That's another part of the story. If I go there, I think I won't go there. Because we want to talk about yoga of spiritual relationships. And Narada Muni's instruction was complete, was perfect. Yes, don't be envious. If you see a person who's superior, superior means not in terms of he has more wealth, he has more beauty, he has more fame, he has more knowledge. Not superior, this is external quality. We see somebody superior in terms of their spiritual qualifications. Superior means to the degree that bhakti is in their heart. To the degree that they have spiritual wisdom, they have knowledge. To the degree not only that they have knowledge and share it with others, but to the degree that they treat others. In fact, our acharyas have even told us that even in the association of devotees, there are different levels of seeing others. Rupa Goswami says that if you see somebody chanting the holy name of the Lord, but his behavior may not be so good, you respect him from a distance. Within your mind, you offer all respect from him and offer homage to him from a distance. If you see somebody who's really absorbed and engaged fully in devotional service, who has knowledge, who's equal towards others, who treats others nicely, then you should offer physically before them and prostrate yourself before them. And if you see somebody who's totally, fully immersed in knowledge of the Supreme Lord and his relationship with the Lord, and who's devoid completely from the propensity of criticizing others, he says, you should hear from him and faithfully serve him. Because by hearing from and faithfully serving, you'll develop the same qualities that he wants to share with others. So distinctions have to be made on the spiritual platform. We have to know how to see those who are superior in terms of their spiritual stature, spiritual wisdom. Not because, oh, he has a better job than I do, or, you know, he has more wealth than I do, or, you know, he has something. Well, we can look for many different types of criteria, which are all external, which are all the cause of conflict. Because everybody thinks, I want to have what they have, and if I don't have it, then I'm willing to cause harm to others in order to obtain it. I'm willing to become equal to them by pushing them down. I'm willing to become greater than them by pushing them even further down so that I can stand up above them. That's envy. And therefore, spiritual relationships, or the yoga of spiritual relationships, have a different spiritual foundation of how to deal with others. From whatever position one may be, whether one is elevated, whether one is not so elevated, devoid of spiritual qualities, or whether one is equal. The best way to develop, according to our acharyas, the relationships with others. Actually, there's one verse, the Dati Patagrinati Bunya Makyati Pichati Bhunte Bojayate Chava. Actually, Rupa Goswami says that loving relationships begin by sharing. Sharing. He says that loving relationships begin that by giving some gift, and when a gift is offered with love, then when it's offered with love, it means I'm offering this gift not because I'm doing it for you because I expect you to be my friend, and then when the time is right, I expect you to give something back to me. Offered with love means there's no condition. That's love. Love, as soon as you put a condition, it's business. If you say, I'll give this. Sometimes people do the same thing with God. I'll serve you, but on the condition, you make my life easy, please make it easy, don't make things difficult for me. I'm happy to serve, but you make things tough. But God, unfortunately, doesn't need our service. Well, fortunately, I should say, he doesn't need our service. He's already the Supreme. He doesn't need anything. He says in Bhagavad Gita, if you offer me a leaf, a flower, fruit, and water with love, I'll accept it. God is so kind, the Supreme Lord is so kind, that he's ready to accept an offering of even a leaf, a flower, a fruit, or water. But what is the significance of a leaf, flower, fruit, or water for the Supreme Lord, who is the creator of everything? It seems to be very insignificant. But he says, when you offer it with love, I want it. It's not the flower, it's not the fruit, it's the love that attracts him. He's attracted by love. Srila Prabhupada gives the example, just like a young child, he may be given an allowance from his father. And his father may give him some. I had this when I was a child. My father used to give me 25 cents. And I used to go to the store down the street and I used to look at all that candy, because we had things called penny candy in those days. Anybody remember penny candy? The whole shop was filled with penny candy. So I'd go to the shop and then look, wow, I'd spend like a half hour there. Unfortunately, I didn't do the right thing. But Prabhupada gives the analogy, when the child goes, gets an allowance from the father, he goes to the store, he buys some candy, and then he comes back to his father and he says, Father, look, I have some candy. Please take. Father, he's so eager to accept that candy. Why? Because he's been hankering for that penny candy all day? No. It's an offering of love. It's love. It's a display of love. I received something from my father, but I don't want to enjoy it myself. I want to give it to my father, because my father's, without him, I have nothing. That's love. So love means to offer without expecting something in return. When one learns how to love the Supreme Lord, one can also learn how to love its parts and parcels. And love means to offer gifts, because you are a servant of the Supreme Lord. And I want you to have this. And what is the reciprocal relationship when something is offered with love? What makes the relationship complete? Not that the person gives something back, but the person sees, oh, he's offering with love. Not that he's interested. He's already self-satisfied in his relationship with God. He doesn't expect anything from others. He doesn't expect respect. He doesn't expect wealth. He doesn't expect gifts. He's happy. But when somebody offers something to him with love, he thinks, oh, this is offered with love. Let me accept. That is a loving relationship. Nothing else required. Offer with love, accept it with love. So Rupa Goswami says, loving relationships begin when we offer with love. And when we accept with love. Not then when we offer and expect something. Then, unfortunately, we come down a notch in our relationship and engage in business. But love means no. We don't expect anything. I do this because I love you. That is the yoga of love, the yoga of relationships. And it begins with learning how to love the Supreme. Because by learning how to love the Supreme, then, just as we gave the example, when the sun rises in the sky, we can see everything automatically. Everything is revealed by the presence of the sun. In the same way, when we understand our relationship with the Supreme, in the presence of that relationship with the Supreme, we see all living entities as his sons and daughters. And therefore, spiritual vision means we have loving relationships. In this way, it begins by understanding our relationship with the Supreme. So therefore, Rupa Goswami says, we give gifts, you accept gifts when they're offered with love. He says, you reveal your mind in confidence. You can open your mind to somebody that you love, because you know he won't exploit it. Right? Something very difficult. These days, most people are afraid to open their minds because they'll see it on Facebook the next day. Right? Everybody's, they're so afraid. How can I open my mind? I'll be exploited, I'll be cheated. I've been through that again. And they become so closed. But when there's love, there's trust. So we open our minds, we reveal our minds in confidence, and we inquire confidentially, because we know it will be in confidence. This is the yoga of love. To accept prasadam, food offered to the Lord, and to give prasadam to others. This Rupa Goswami has described as the yoga of loving relationships between one devotee and another. And as soon as we actually begin to make distinctions and we associate with those devotees who help us to come to that spiritual vision, we hear from them, we serve them, we respect them, and we respect everyone in the same way. We give respect to everyone. Then what is Narada Muni telling Dhruva? He says, this is the way that you can be happy in the material world. If you don't learn how to deal with other living entities from a spiritual platform, it will be the cause of all kinds of material tribulations. What does Suniti say? You cause pain to somebody else, it's going to come back. Sometimes we don't see it. We're blind. We don't understand why did it come. We try to counteract the effects of pain by engaging in another activity which causes pain again in the future. Everybody's trying to counteract They're fruitive activities. Actually, Narada Muni, when he's speaking to another person, Prachini Bharishad, he says, a person who tries to counteract a fruitive activity by another fruitive activity is like a person who wakes up from a very bad dream and then tries to counteract it with a bad hallucination. Like you might wake up from a bad dream that somebody's killing you, and you wake up, you feel relief, but then it gets completely dark. You look at the curtain, you see it's moving, and you think there's somebody behind you who's going to kill you. In your dream, you suffer, and when you wake up, you suffer. So counteracting fruitive activities by another fruitive activity is like trying to bring about a solution to my suffering, but I counteract it with another method which is going to cause more suffering in the future. Better one wakes up to Krishna consciousness. This is why Narada Muni was speaking to Dhruva in this way. He was trying to convince him, just become equipoised. Don't seek harm, vengeance. Don't be envious. Just try to become equipoised and see all living beings and associate with them in the proper way and don't cause any harm to others. But Dhruva Maharaj at this particular point was unable to accept that good instruction. But if we understand from our point of life that this is good instruction, it is realized wisdom, then we should not have to go through what Dhruva Maharaj did to get the fulfillment of his desires. Dhruva Maharaj, because he couldn't accept that instructions, he had to perform very severe austerities. He stopped eating and began eating wild berries every 3 days and took bath, and he was given a mantra by Narada Muni to chant Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. He did that every 3 days, and he would take bath several days at a sacred place, Madhuvan, along the bank of the Yamuna River. And then after 3 days of taking berries, then he started eating leaves, dried leaves and bark, once every 6 days. And continued taking bath and chanting his mantra. And then after doing that, I remember every 9 days he began, instead of eating, he was taking breath and living off his breath. And then every 12 days, he would breathe. And then he became very powerful by those austerities, by his mystic yogic practices, by chanting of that Vedic mantra, that within 6 months, he began meditating and perceiving the presence of the Lord within his heart. And at some point, after 6 months of that very deep austerities and meditation, his meditation broke, and before him was manifested that Supreme Lord. It's not recommended. That's what had to be done by Dhruva to get to the point where he could ask the Lord for the fulfillment of his desire. And even then, he realized, wait a minute, now that I've seen you, these desires were petty. Now that I've seen you, I came here looking for a piece of broken glass and I found the most valuable jewel. What a petty desire I had. I wanted revenge. I wanted a kingdom better than my father's, grandfather's. He was thinking that way. Petty desires. I found the most valuable jewel. Of course, there's more, but the point that I wish to end on, because I said that I would end by now, is that why go to the extent that Dhruva had to go through? Why not hear Narada Muni what he's saying now? Very good instruction of how to have relationships and practice the yoga relationships. Learning how to respect everyone and to be kind and to be merciful and compassionate to others by not trying to cause them any harm, and to be even more compassionate by trying to give them the greatest gift, was the gift of spiritual wisdom, of knowledge, of one's eternal relationship with the Supreme. Very simple process, which can begin simply by chanting Hare Krishna. That is all. Simply by chanting Hare Krishna. So, our next is that we're going to ask Arundhati Devadasi if she will chant Hare Krishna for everyone present. And I thank you very much for your attention. And
Maharaj, any questions, comments? Any questions, if anyone?
I don't know. Should we have?
It's 12:45 only.
Well, does anybody have any questions?
Oh,
yes.
Excuse
me.
When one is able to see with equal vision, Panija Samadharsana, when one is trying to respect the spiritual master, should he attain the body or soul or the spirit? Which one should he? Should he pay respect to the body of the spiritual master or the spiritual master in the soul form or his true soul?
One pays respect to the spiritual master because he sees Krishna manifest to him. Excuse me. Can I get a little water? Oh, sorry. He sees Krishna manifest in his words. He pays respect to his words. Body may, in fact, Rupa Goswami, it says that one should not consider the body of the spiritual master. One may see that there may be some physical infirmities, they see some things, but it's not that body. So what is the most important manifestation that comes through the spiritual master is that he is the vayu medium from which Krishna manifests through his words. So we pay, as we say every day, my only wish is to have my consciousness purified by the words emanating from the lotus feet. That is all we are for respect, spiritual master. Yes?
At the very end, you hinted at something I'd like to ask a little more about. You spoke at length about respecting but not causing harm. So the question is, if you see someone who is causing harm to himself, either in a gross or subtle way, then does that respect for them impel you to do something about that?
Causing harm to himself?
Yeah. You see someone who's causing harm to themselves.
Yes.
Out of respect for them, are you then, is that an impetus to try and help them?
Certainly.
And then if we extend that, then we see that most people are causing harm to themselves for lack of knowledge.
Yes. Well, you're asking me to give another lecture. But to give it in sutra form. Give it to her. We should say that we see others suffering. A Vaishnava is one who's called Paradukaduki. Paradukaduki means one who sees others suffering as his own. Because a Vaishnava, Krishna explains in many places in Bhagavad Gita, a Vaishnava is satisfied by dint of his relationship with the Supreme. In fact, Madhashriya Katabhishta Shinvanti Katiyanti Cha, Srimad Bhagavatam says that such persons, sadhus, who are absorbed in thoughts of Krishna, they don't suffer because they're always filled with thoughts of Krishna. They may appear to suffer, they may appear to experience pain, but actually they know that whatever pain, whatever suffering they have is temporary, And it will, in due course of time, it will be over. And they don't suffer because they know their future is very bright. And because they feel their connection with the Supreme Lord, they're satisfied simply to serve Him. And don't spend excessive effort to counteract their sufferings by some temporary measures. So, paradukaduki means a person, a Vaishnava, because he doesn't see his own suffering as something as so significant. He feels suffering when he sees others suffering. When he sees others suffering, that is his pain. That is his pain. And therefore, because he sees others suffering due to their forgetfulness of the Supreme, he feels compelled, let me help them, so they don't have to suffer in the future. They may be suffering now, but yes, I can try to help them avoid temporarily their pain. But if they're going to commit activities which in the future will cause more pain, either in this life or in the next, then let me try to help him by spiritual wisdom to understand his eternal relationship with the Supreme, because simply by knowing his relationship with the Supreme, then one of the benefits is that one doesn't have to take birth again. So that is how a Vaishnava, and we see the example of many Vaishnavas in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Prahlad Maharaj was such a Vaishnava. He was not interested in his own liberation. He said, please, I simply care for those who have forgotten you, and I don't even want to be liberated unless everybody else on this whole planet is liberated first, and I'm given the opportunity to give them an opportunity to have a relationship with you. That's compassion of a Vaishnava. We can't imitate it. It shouldn't be artificially imitated. But we should seek out the association of those who do have wisdom, who do have compassion. And if we see that we are suffering due to forgetfulness of the Supreme Lord, we should faithfully hear from and serve those persons who can help us. And therefore the Vaishnava, because he doesn't expect anything for himself, he simply wants to help others. It is a very important quality. The devotee of Vaishnava doesn't expect anything for helping others, except the opportunity to serve them and to help them. So there's many ways, as I said, I'm trying to give you a sutra form. I mean, I could expand on this, but I hope that was the sutra gave the essence of what you were looking for. Any other questions? Yes?
When you said about the relationship superior than you, equal to you, and inferior, no less. Okay, it's easy to, or I would say it's easier to differentiate that who is superior, because you know how much we have and how much we know. But when it comes to being equal or inferior, how do we decide that? That means equal to me or not, or is inferior? Wouldn't there be disrespect considering somebody who's thinking he's inferior, or if he's, maybe he's superior, but you think he's equal? Where does that come from?
It's not disrespect to see somebody inferior as long as you don't treat them as inferior. When you treat them as inferior, that's disrespectful. But to see them as inferior means that you have enough wisdom to see that they lack wisdom and they're causing harm to themselves. And you, by your dint of your vision, see what you can give them to help them so they don't cause harm to themselves. And you have to respect them for them to hear you. If you think, I want to be the master of this person, don't start. Don't start. No. Why I want to be, because I'm superior? You should accept me as superior. Can't you see I'm superior to you? Anybody who enters a relationship with that consciousness should just keep his mouth shut.
Huh? That's the ego right there.
That's the ego right there. And it's evident. Vaishnava always thinks himself to be lower than the strong in the street. I am the servant of everyone. I once heard a lecture of Srila Prabhupada's seat in front of the students. And the students, one of the students shouted out at the end of the talk. He said, "Oh, you think you're Brahmin? You're sitting on this raised seat with these flowers around you. You want respect." And he was finding fault with my spiritual master. Prabhupada wasn't speaking like that. Prabhupada bowed his head. He said, "No, I'm not first class man. I'm fifth class man. Because I'm servant of all four classes." He thought like this. And the devotee, one devotee who was standing next to him, I know, he was a friend of mine, he said he saw a tear coming from Prabhupada's eye. This is how a Vaishnava thinks. I'm a servant of everyone. I'm not their master. I'm their servant. You see others in this capacity, then you have the capacity to help them. And you don't see them that they're inferior and treat them as inferior. You treat them with respect. And you help them by wisdom, very expertly administered, so that they can hear. So one has to be on that superior platform to see the distinctions. And if they're not able to see, then at least they have to associate with those who are superior so they can come up to that platform. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, so I don't know if I understood this right, but like, don't even touch the criteria of being equal or inferior, just serve. Is that the message
no.
I'm getting?
No. Seek out the association of those who are superior, and then by hearing from them and serving them, gradually begin to recognize who are equal and who are inferior. First and foremost is to seek out the association of those who are superior. That is first. That is the beginning. By hearing from them. And then, gradually, one can be able to see the proper distinctions. Because it's not so easy to see who's equal. And even those who are equal, a Vaishnava will even treat those who are equal as superior. Because he thinks, they're equal, they're my friend. I won't be proud in front of them. I'll treat them with all respect. And because I treat them as superior, they'll never take advantage of that. Because they're friends, they'll never exploit our treating them as a superior, and we'll always reciprocate in a very loving way. And then we know we're friends. We can trust them. Because they won't exploit. Yes?
I'm sorry, I missed a major part of your speech actually. I was late coming here.
I don't know if it was recorded, but...
Yes,
it is.
Yeah. I'm just wondering, what is the need for recognizing an equal? I can understand learning from the superiors and helping the inferiors, you know, if at all one wants to recognize. But if one has a helping attitude all the time, as a rational or anything, then is there a need?
There is a need, because generally we are surrounded by equals, and we have to know how to deal with them properly. It's not so, association of those who are superior, they may not be so readily accessible as those who are equal. And if we don't know how to associate with those who are equal, we may miss out on very meaningful relationships if we don't know how to associate with them, because generally we're surrounded by people who are equal. So therefore we have to learn how to recognize those who are equal and associate with them properly. And as Narada Muni said to Dhruva Maharaj, one should not be proud in the presence of an equal. He should not. The tendency is to be proud, to show him, just see, my achievements are greater than your achievements. One should avoid such pride and appreciate, you are equal to me, therefore please give me the opportunity to render some service to you. And please, let us sit and discuss transcendental topics with each other. Please, you tell me, share your realizations of Krishna consciousness with me, because I respect what you'll give me. And if I have something I would like to share from hearing your wisdom, I beg you, please hear me, and let's have some exchange. Krishna says, Machitta Magata Pranabodhyatta Parasparam. Says, the thoughts of my devotees dwell in me, the lives are surrendered unto me, and they derive great satisfaction and bliss enlightening one another and conversing about me. Equals.
Would you say you can learn always something from anybody, including the inferiors?
If one is in the right consciousness, he can always take gold even from the most filthy place.
What happened to the soul if somebody passed away?
Different destinations according to their activities in this life. As we were speaking about before, the living entity carries his different conceptions of life from one body to the next, just as the air carries aromas from one place to the next. So Krishna gives us an analogy in the Bhagavad Gita that just as the air carries a different its aromas, it's carried by the air, in the same way, whatever conceptions that the living entity has at the time of giving up his body, that determines the next body he will take. So therefore, one who understands that the soul will transmigrate into another body, dependent upon his consciousness. And Krishna says, Antakali chamami vasmaran mukha kalevaram. Whoever remembers me at the time of giving up his body, he attains my nature, this is no doubt. But if we forget and we're absorbed in thoughts of other attachments, unfulfilled desires, then we have to take a birth to accommodate those unfulfilled desires. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Maharaj, for the wonderful discourse.
Can you bring the garland?
Yeah.
So, we are really very thankful to Maharaj. Maharaj has been traveling extensively. He was, for a few days, he was in Canada, then Florida, North Carolina, then Hartford, and Boston. So he was everywhere. He, Maharaj's main service are in Russia and Ukraine. So he comes to Northeast USA, about twice in a year. He stays here a few weeks, taking care of his responsibilities of some of the centers. And he's not supposed to travel so much, but then, still we make him travel, and because of his love, he travels all over, and so we are very thankful, Maharaj. Thank you so much. Now, all of you also, we are very happy to see all of you on the Easter Sunday. So thank you so much. I had to make a few announcements. Like a few of our friends, actually, this is a photograph over here. One of very dear friend. He was living in Newark. We know him close to 15 years. So he left his body like 2 months back on the day of the Ekadashi. He was having a cancer of the intestine, and for the whole last year he was sick. He actually came to meet us in December saying everybody goodbye. And he said, I came to see all my loved ones. I'm leaving. I will not leave before the January 14th. He stopped eating and drinking like 2 months. And he was so much kind of heart because he had done the PhD in agriculture. He was helping us to do the planting flowers and fruits for our deities. That was his main service, and then he would teach us. We are kind of very hard to do something, some kind of work with the laborers, kind of we don't have that kind of knowledge, or we don't have that kind of we are not trained to do that. But he would do this very lovingly with us. He was a PhD. He would do that at our home, and because of that service, over the years, his interest grew so much in the chanting and all the time. So, over the last 2 months, when he practically stopped drinking and eating, so in the last month, I went to see him. And he said that, you know, I was sure that you would come and I would leave when devotees are chanting with me. So on that day he chanted, and then he spoke so much. Actually, practically on that day he was completely sick. He was hardly able to speak anything. But after a few hours of chanting, he became so much lively. And he was speaking like he has no illness. He says that, you know, I'm so happy that you came and chant, and I'm going to leave while you devotees are chanting. And actually he loved this city so much. So he said this city and like this service, he kind of made so much kind of, you know, the prophecies that, you know, I will be somewhere around here serving with you. But and then after 3 days, his wife, Sharadaji, she called me that, you know, he is now breathing so heavily. So we went in the morning, and guess what, that was the day of Ekadashi. We were there 3 hours chanting with him, and he left body very peacefully. Like throughout his 1 year, he never complained. Like he has a young son doing the MD, PhD. He has so many responsibilities. But he never complained anything. Like, you know, so many, because the husband and wife, none of them, they have a job. The son is in the college. So many difficulties, but they never complained. Because of his nature, he never complained. He never even told me a single time that, you know, watch for my son, help me, my wife, or, you know, take care of him. Because there is no, I mean, as such, if I put myself in that situation, it's a very difficult situation. But somehow Krishna gave him the shelter. He was, and so good at this kirtan when we did. And then our dear friend Barbara also, she lost her parents 1 month apart. You know, 1 month apart, she lost her parent, and she was talking to Jalangi. Jalangi said, you know, please come. You know, we have a senior devotee coming. We have a senior devotee coming. You should do the association. We pray for that. And then yesterday, my sister, you know, Manisha, she actually lost her father's older brother. You know? I mean, he's so much. So it's a very, very appropriate question of asking, you know, that like what happens when we leave this body, you know. The seminar was based on the yoga of relationship, you know. We live in a temporary world, so we are all worried about it. What would happen to my all relationship, you know? What would and how would I be connected, and like how I'm treating people over here, and how my journey continued. And Maharaj kind of explained very, very nicely that, you know, we should try to see the spiritual part of in each of us. You know, if we somehow do that, we are connected to people whom we love. If we get ourselves connected to the spiritual entity, the spiritual source of everything, you know. So, and without further delay, I would go for the next part of the event, which is the chanting of the holy name. As some of you know that in this tradition, that what we are following is that this is the way we try to connect to the God. You know, it's a loving call that we make to the Lord, that, oh my dear Lord, please engage me in your service. You know, that's the call. And this is the, we see the all races and all kind of all ages, all kind of all levels of men over here. People from all the walks of the life. So it's a very simple, easy process. It works, it's very effective. As we can hear from the Maharaj, that, you know, after years of practice, person gets that understanding. It's not a dry speculative process that you get something after the end of life. You know, you become, is at every step you enjoy the fruits of this process. So, and the main purpose is that we are trying to pray that, oh Lord, please connect me in your service. Today being this very special day, I would request all of you to pray for all these four departed souls, you know, namely our friend Sharma Kulani, Barbara's parent, Baba, what are their names?
Rose and Don.
Rose and Don. And they left before about?
1 month in December and 1 month in March.
And they were How old they were about?
86 and 87.
Okay, 86 and 87. Rose and Dawn. And then Manisha's uncle. How old he was? 87. And his name was Keshav Prasad. You know, so I request all of you devotees, you know, please pray from your heart for the next destination of this departed souls to be in the service of the Lord. You know, and of course, when we do that, we ourselves may engage in the service of the Lord. So my request is that Mother Arundhati will do for some time, and then Maharaj will do for some time. We end by 1:45, and then we'll have the lunch across the road, I think, in the same, at the Bliss Kitchen, in the same Lord. Most of you know where it is, Bliss Kitchen. So once again, I thank you so much for coming and giving us the opportunity to serve. And now this is another part of the thing is that we have been doing this kind of gathering every week at my home. But for the last year and a half, we were not able to do that because of the restaurant. Because we have this service of the restaurant and doing that now. So we are doing that again over here. This same gathering will happen every week. And once in a while, we'll have the senior personalities when they are traveling in the area. We'll invite them. We'll keep you, all of you, informed. The timing will be the same around mid morning or late afternoon, 11 to 1 timing. We'll let you know. So in that regard, I want to make a personal note with the Maharaj. We know Maharaj for more than 20 years. When we were since 96 or 98, for the first time we met the Maharaj. After that, whatever small service we have started, Maharaj has been he has been the source of inspiration. So he would make his time and he'd come, and whatever little way we are doing it, he'll come to encourage us. So you know, we moved to our home. He was the first sannyasi to visit us. Then we built the medical office, and Maharaj was our first patient. You know, I checked his blood pressure first. we had the pharmacy open. That's my brother Hari Ramanand. He has a pharmacy. He has National Pharmacy. And Maharaj was the first one to take the medicine. So then we had the restaurant. And so he was there at the restaurant. So now we are. So Kishak, this was a coincidence. We have been planning to start this. This center was ready in last September. But somehow it wasn't happening. So now I think all our obstacles have been removed. You know, we pray for Maharaj's mercy. And since this was the Sunday of the Easter, I said this will not be counted. You know? He would have to come again, because Easter Sunday not many friends can come. You know, we have so many friends locally, but they all have to go with the family. So Maharaj has lovingly said yes, he would come next time when he visits. So, Mother Arundhati, please.